The next, what is the date? The 21st. So the next sort of 3 weeks and a bit, there's going to be an enormous amount of hot air about the ANC's upcoming electoral conference. And there's going to be a lot of misinformation. There are going to be a lot of allegations and accusations. There are going to be a lot of untruths and half-truths and exaggerated truths. And we are all going to have to just do our best to sift through the wool to find the sheep underneath. That's a very strange analogy. I forgive myself for using it, though. Chat now to Richard Callan, co-author with Mabel Sithole, of an extremely readable and useful book just published, The Presidents, From Mandela to Ramaphosa, Leadership in the Age of Crisis. Hello, Richard.
Good afternoon, John. How are you?
Don't ask. We spoke for about an hour and 20 minutes at the launch of this book, and we got through about a tenth of what I would want to ask you. So given the sort of 10 minutes we have, it's going to be tough. So, I mean, essentially, let me start by asking you this question. What insights do we get about the present and the future of the presidential project in South Africa by looking back at the performances of the ones that came before?
Well, I think the question of what is required of a leader and what does this country require of its head of state, its head of government, I think is the burning question, particularly at a time like now where the sense of crisis, of doom and gloom is so intense. And when, of course, the ANC is about to decide if its current president, Cyril Ramaphosa, should get another 5 years and therefore probably a second term as president of the country. And what we say in the book is the most important thing for such a leader is to be able to identify and then resolve the big strategic dilemmas. And I think as a general point, any leader needs to be able to make the tough decisions when the tough decisions present themselves to him or her. And in the book, we discuss the extent to which the five presidents since 1994 have been up to that particular task.
And which of them were most up to the task?
Well,
if you try to go back to the context in which they were the president, rather than judging them in Mandela's case with 23 years of hindsight and with five fewer years of hindsight in Thabo Mbeki's case and so on.
Yes, exactly. And as we discussed last night, context is everything. And hindsight is not the appropriate lens. What one has to do is put, as you say, yourself in the shoes of the decision maker, the leader at that point in history, and say, knowing what they must have known then, and weighing all the consequences in the balance, did they identify the strategic choice and did they make one? And yes, Mandela did. He having assumed power in 1994, he decided that nation building, the National Reconciliation Project, the Rainbow Nation, all of that was his strategic, not just motif, but his strategic choice. Whether it was the right one or not, whether it was a good judgment call, we can debate. But that was his choice at the time. And in that way, he did, I think, make a strategic choice. Mbeki did it in his own way, in the sense that he grappled with the two nations. What is really wrong with the society? The deep structural inequality that persists even now. And Mbeki had a plan for that, and he confronted it. Again, perhaps he failed in the end, but for a number of years he began to make progress. And, of course, there was his massive blind spot on HIV/AIDS, which will always scar his legacy, unfortunately. And then, of course, he was turfed out of power.
And Jacob Zuma's strategy was to steal the state blind, and I suppose to an extent he succeeded in that for a very long time. He was eventually called to something of an account. But if his only strategic purpose was to hollow out institutions in the service of his and his family's and his cohort's financial interests, then, hey, he was a great president from a strategic point of view.
Well, we say that he understood power perhaps better than any of the five, and he certainly used it. He abused it. He used the authority and the power of the presidency to malign intent, and very effectively for at least a few years. Happily, in the end, the rule of law prevailed, and thankfully he was turfed out of power as well, but not before a huge amount of harm was done to democracy, to institutions, institutions that, by the way, Mbeki had worked extremely hard to build up. He believed that a modern president needs a strong intellectual and political muscle around the presidency so that the president can get things done. He can get his decisions executed across government. And that was hollowed out, as you say, by Zuma. And now Ramaphosa has, over the last few years, been trying to recover that, rebuild that institutional capability. And it's an uphill task.
And a task which you and Mabel Sithole suggest he has not done terribly well in.
He started well. There was Ramaphosa. There was tailwinds, which he benefited from. And in that first year, I think he did extremely well. He put in place the basic fundamentals for the rebuilding project. He put in place the commissions, the judicial inquiries, and all of that to, for example, rebuild the Revenue Service, the National Prosecuting Authority, and so on. And I thought that was going to be a springboard then for a really powerful revamp of the credibility, the trust, and the capability of the state. But it hasn't really followed through. Why? Because I don't think he's capable of addressing and taking those tough choices as a leader. He tends to shirk them or work around them. And at a time of really urgent crisis, that temper of decision-making, that bravery, that courage, that risk-taking that I think a leader needs at such a time, I don't think we see it with Ramaphosa.
And yet, I've been told by many people who were had things to do with him during the time that he was the General Secretary of the National Union of Mine Workers, that he was brave, that he was resolute, that he was a leader in that sense that you say he is no longer a leader. So why, I mean, if their memories of that time are accurate and distance does lend a sort of romance to the view, why would he have changed? Why would he now be so much more cautious than he was when he was a trade union leader?
It's a fascinating point, and we have interviews in the book with people who knew him well in the 80s, who advised him, lawyers who worked with him when he was the General Secretary of COSATU and so on, and they indeed say that he was courageous, brave, decisive, at times ruthless. But as Wolf Mayer points out to us in an interview, it's one thing when you are a negotiator on behalf of a single organization with a single interest to when you are a president with a job that includes balancing the interests of many different segments of society and different interest holders. It's a much more complicated job, obviously. And I think that's where different skill sets are required. And in doing that balancing act and his sort of almost obsession with consultation, over-consultation, and setting up commissions of inquiry and all the rest of it, and the book sets out a very long list of such things, it does suggest somebody who is unwilling to lead in the sense of taking that advanced, decisive decision and getting people to follow him, having convinced them of the righteousness of that cause and of that judgment.
And Richard, with the what did you call it yesterday? Nasrec 2.
Nasrec 2, yes.
Yeah, Nasrec 2 coming up.
You mean on the landscape, on the horizon, yes.
Yeah. And you were saying at the launch, and we don't have time to go into all of the nitty-gritty of this, but you're reasonably sure that Ramaphosa is going to be re-elected president, but that for various reasons doesn't mean that A, he is going to complete the second term as president, and B, that he will be able to throw off the cautionary shackles because he knows he has only X number of years in which to make some kind of historic imprint.
Well, let's see. I mean, one scenario is that he wins convincingly next month, and that not only he wins, but he manages to end up with a National Executive Committee in a top six that is much more supportive of his reform efforts than the current balance of power that he inherited in 2017. I unfortunately think that's unlikely. I think he may well end up with more or less what he has now, or perhaps even worse. In which case, it's unlikely that this is a political leopard who will change his spots. It's unlikely that he'll be able to release the handbrake. And unfortunately, the ANC and his fractured, broken party is going to continue, I suspect, to be a drag factor on him and his leadership. But I would dearly love to be proved wrong.
And you said yesterday, when you were asked a question from the audience at the launch, who's going to be the next ANC president, the one that comes after Cyril Ramaphosa, after a full second-year term or an interrupted second-year term. And you said Paul Mashatile. Very briefly, if you can, why Mashatile? And if it is he, what kind of leadership do you expect from him?
So he's clearly in the front-runner to be the deputy president elected next month. And he's established himself not just in that role, but also as a kingmaker within the ANC. And he could play a very significant role in this process of determining the balance of forces within the ANC in this electoral process next month. And then, of course, he'll be the proverbial heartbeat away from the presidency in many respects. And if Ramaphosa is tripped up by the Pala-Pala inquiry and impeachment process, for example, if he just gets tired of the job, or if in the second term he proves to be a lame duck, then Mashatile will be poised, I think, to take over. What sort of leader will he be? Difficult to say. He's a bit of an unknown quantity. And he's not really associated directly with either the RET faction or indeed the Reform faction. His power base is at Gauteng. He's built up over many years a real powerful network of business people and politicians around that province. And that's his base. And it's a powerful base. And he's a very smart, perhaps ruthless, and quite decisive political leader. Whether he'll be able to transpose that into the highest echelon of leadership in the presidency and how effective he'll be, only time will tell.
Richard, thank you very, very much indeed for chatting to us and for this wonderful book that you've co-written with Mabel Sithole. That's Richard Calland. Mabel Sithole and he wrote The Presidents, From Mandela to Ramaphosa, Leadership in the Age of Crisis. Well worth reading.